In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser. Eusebius Makaiser.
I hope you are well with all the public holidays, the Easter weekend having come and gone. Commemorative days like Freedom Day as well ahead of us, depending on when you're listening to this edition of In the Ring. I can't keep up with the rhythm of where we are at. All I know is we are marching very quickly towards winter. It is bloody cold in Johannesburg. I don't know where you are listening from, but we've got this deceptive weather. If you're not used to Jersey weather, where the sun is out, it's bright. And then just like that, if you're on the shade or if you blink, it can go from a sunny late autumn type of vibe to suddenly reminding you that actually it's no longer summer. Be that as it may, today's episode is going to be, I think, fairly short. Well, sometimes I say that and I end up having a longer one than I had imagined. And I simply want to make good on a promise that I had made on Facebook. Now, not everyone is on Facebook, so I'll bring you up to speed if you missed one of my posts yesterday. And then I will make good on the promise that I had made on Facebook. I basically had a post that I had headlined, "How Not to Respond to Racism in the Workplace or Elsewhere," and also how not to respond to other forms of oppression in the workplace or elsewhere. And I didn't list all of the bad ways of responding to forms of oppression, but I highlighted at least two. The first is the tendency of companies to get a guest speaker in once or twice a year, and it's a tick box exercise. I am long in the game as a public speaker. I have been invited many a times, and I can tell you for free that you don't get good returns on your investment in a public speaker, and for that matter, your time, even if they're willing to do it for free, which they shouldn't because it is work, because you can't, through one speech, change the DNA of a company. If misogyny, if racism, if non-racial unconscious biases are deeply embedded within the culture of a firm, its processes, how HR determines who gets in, who gets promoted, who leaves, who gets a bonus, then you got to go on a very long journey, which I'll get to later. But what you shouldn't do is to fool yourself and to think, oh, let's get that quote-unquote controversial guy that writes about race. Isn't what's his name? Eusebius? Eubias? Maybe if we get him in, the bosses will start taking a note. And often you will find some great social justice champion that has hoped that if they can convince a group of people that are organizing the AGM or the weekly brown paper discussion that happens maybe in the cafeteria on a Friday over lunch when there's external speakers invited in. I mean, I get that kind of thing all the time, from law firms to banks, estate agents, property companies, that kind of thing. And it's often to come and speak about racism. A distant second, I'll occasionally be asked to come and speak about patriarchy, but most of the request is for race. And of course, I'll never get something as quote unquote sophisticated as being asked to come and speak on ableism or class-based prejudices, accent bias, or other forms of oppression that intersect with racism. Because in the South African context, racism gets the lion's share of attention or pretense attention, because that's the point. So that's the first point that I made. One speech does not include a journey. A speech is an event. It is not a journey. A speech is 45 minutes of someone giving a soliloquy, however incisive, however beautiful. They may empower you by giving you language for feelings you've had that you can't describe. And sure, there's value in that. You might feel seen and heard for the first time. That's important. But ultimately, you want your company to be a socially just workplace. One that is fair, one that is safe, where you can be productive. That's not going to happen if you have one speech be it from some person that's quote-unquote safe and kumbaya, or someone that's going to be a lightning rod and speak awkward truths about racism. And I see a lot of that going on. And I will often say to a client, a prospective client, listen, you can have me in. I'm happy to come. I enjoy speaking. And there could be a benefit to me speaking. You could leverage politically, as it were, some of the insights that I might deliver in my speech to try and convince the leadership to embark on a longer journey. But please don't gossip about me 6 months later when you go to a HR conference or you go to a middle management conference in your industry and your colleagues elsewhere in the sector ask you for a recommendation of a speaker and you say, oh, don't get Eusebius in. We thought things would be better after we invited him and they've just stayed the same. You cannot expect a 1 hour allocated speech to be transformative work. It's not. So please don't kid yourself. So that was the first point that I made. The second point that I made was, if social justice is not one of the top five priorities of the boss, nothing's going to happen. A goal needs to be measurable and measured, and the KPIs of the most powerful person in the organogram need to be tied to it in order for it to be taken seriously. Otherwise, it's going to be a nice to have, and it will depend on what the boss had for breakfast, whether or not there's a serious investment in that journey. And so unless the board, the shareholders, made it compulsory for a CEO or COO or whoever is powerful to prove that they are eliminating the evidence-based diagnostic reports, hellish narrative about racism or patriarchy, and improve on it based on recommendations, if it is not tied to the performance requirements of a CEO, then you will seldom see change happening, because the people who are lower down the ladder, who are less powerful in the organogram, can't just be rhetorically the champions for change in the workplace. You need to have company resources plowed into a long journey, and you need the decision makers who've got real power and de facto power to actually be on board. And I'm afraid in the capitalist world in which we live, that means setting up incentives for them to do so rather than appealing to some sort of ethical leadership inclination. Let's not kid ourselves. It's beautiful to write Batopele in the foyer of an office of the government. It doesn't mean that the staff are going to live those principles out when they interface with you as a citizen. Corporates are no different. They will sell you stuff when they come to your campus and speak about how beautiful it is to work for Bain. Little do you know you're about to go and work for a company that is also going to be implicated in state capture, and gone are all the beautiful values you were sold when they came to recruit you in the graduate recruitment programs. And so it's critically important, I made the second point on Facebook, that you must tie any journey that the company embarks on to eliminate racism and patriarchy and how it intersects with other kinds of injustices in the workplace, that journey must be tied specifically to the performance indicators and requirements that can be measured and must be measured at the highest levels within that company. If that's not the case, your chances of successful transformative work being done are pretty low. Okay, so now we're all up to speed. Those of you who read the post already knew that. If you didn't, I hope you found what I've just said useful and that you will reflect on it. And that if you are the kind of person who loves putting together events and you are in charge of quote-unquote eventing in your company, that you will meditate on why speeches are useful, because they give you vocabulary, they can empower you politically, you can reference the external speaker who's not a stakeholder in the company for future discussion. So I'm not saying don't call a Eusebius, don't call a Terry Oakley-Smith, Don't Call a Professor Jackie Nordia, and many others who do incredibly important work within diversity and inclusion and social justice. Loveland Wade is another example. And I mean, I can give you many other recommendations if you reach out to me. I'm not saying don't do that, but please be aware that there are many different models for how you do this. And depending on which model you sign up for, you will have different levels of success potentially in terms of genuine transformation. The model that is the cheapest but also has got the least returns is the singular annual or biannual speech by a speaker. That's the most important thing. And then I'm supplementing that by also recommending that if the CEO is not in the room when that conversation happens, and I've come across that often, I'll get invited, there'll be 500 people waiting, and the person looking after me, as it were, will say, oh, sorry, CEO, I almost gave a real example of this, so-and-so can't make it today, he's got another appointment. Now, I mean, ultimately, I don't really care. I'm too old to feel slighted that the CEO is not there. But I feel bad for the staff, because the CEO is really dissing them by not being there and not taking part in something that had been planned usually at least 3, if not 6 months ahead of schedule. And oftentimes when I prod a little bit and I get client team members to take me into their confidence, and I never break confidence, once or twice, unsurprisingly, it's been very clear that the person made sure, the CEO that is, that they are not around when this conversation happens. So if there's no buy-in at the top level, you're not going to get change. So on Facebook, I said, listen to the next edition of Eusebius, In the Ring with Eusebius McKayser, to understand what should be done, because all I've said is what should not be done. Here's what you should do. Don't cut and paste. You can't assume that because you know South Africa, you know Eusebius Inc., you know Nduduzo Inc. There are general truths about all workplaces in the country because our lives are so interconnected as citizens. But then there are also particularities about your firm that won't apply to mine. And so step number one is you need a proper qualitative and quantitative set of data about your company to be evaluated, excavated, analyzed, so that you can understand what is going on in Eusebius Incorporated. And now you can see why getting the speaker in doesn't work. Because when I walk in cold and all I've had is maybe a gossip session with a client team member that was working with my agent, I don't really understand the texture of the company. I do not know the data, how many people get recruited in year one, what is their journey over a 5 or 10 year period in this firm, who falls out, what do they say in the exit interviews, who gets promoted, what are the criteria evaluatively being used in the process. You need that kind of data. Speak to the people. And that's why I'm saying different methodologies, and it's often a combination. And that can take anything from a couple of weeks to a couple of months, so that the company that does the transformation journey work with you, the starting point must be to say, we've got some intuitions about this company, just based on maybe some anecdotal data, but what we need is a robust data set. And we're going to draw here on both interviews with staff members, for example, and we're going to request certain kinds of data from this and that department, this and that individual, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and other tools that you can use. But there needs to be a diagnosis of this particular company rather than a sort of cookie cutter approach where you can come with your favorite set of prescriptions for any company anywhere in the country. That's balderdash. If someone says to you that they can immediately come into your company and start doing even experiential learning work with your leadership, they're fraudulent. Because unless they themselves have been working there, and even then, unless they've stolen certain data from certain departments within the company before leaving, they're not yet in a position to storyboard the interventions for your company unless they understand what the hell is going on deep inside your country, inside your company. And that's why you can't have a hasty approach where within 1 hour you're suddenly going to turn your company into an exemplar of social justice. Once you've done the diagnostic work, then you have a quiet period where the company must wait, because the consultants will then go and do their thing privately, draw on their expertise, the tools and practices they normally use. If they need to investigate new ones, depending on what the diagnostics had thrown out for them, then they will prepare all of that, and probably doing it with some consultation with whoever the client team members may be. But fundamentally, that is the intellectual leadership that the consulting company then brings to the table. Once there is a presentation and an acceptance to the leadership, and I've gone through this process with a couple of companies, then you walk them through what the data shows the real truth is, not their imagined truth about their own company. And it's painful. And that's why you also need really skilled moderators, really skilled facilitators. There's nothing more painful than a board of 12, 14, mostly men, being told, you might have thought that your company is virtuous. Here's the reality, based on rigorous methodology of what your cultural DNA actually is. That alone can be a long process as well, because there's resistance to accept uncomfortable truths. And only after that, which probably requires a day two workshop, and you know, people in the C-suite are very precious about their time, you know, to come back for a second day after a reluctant psychological breakthrough that happens hopefully on day one, now you have to say, okay, for the next 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, this is what the journey looks like. These are the tools that we recommend. And now let's embark on it. This is periodically how we will check in with you. Let's agree on what counts as ultimate success. And let's agree what counts as success midway through, so that you hold us accountable as consultants, and in turn, so that we can have an idea of whether we are progressing or not. Otherwise, there's no point in continuing. You wasting your money, we wasting our time. And then you've got an iterative process, and hopefully, a year or two later, you have a company that begins to look and feel and operate differently to the one that existed for the past 50 years, 100 years. That strategically is how you do serious social justice work. And I've not even told you what I mean by these tools, right? I'm not going to share with you my own intellectual property, but I think at a strategic level, you understand now why the process, if sincere, is a long journey, as long as 18 months, 2 years. You can't rush it. And you're certainly not going to transform your company by disseminating this podcast.